Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Andrew Hunneke. This week, we're joined by two former Secretaries of Agriculture, Dan Glickman and Mike Johanns, who join us to talk about reconciliation, the Make America Healthy Again Commission report, the Farm Bill, USDA downsizing, and trade and tariffs. But first, here's this week's headlines. The Trump administration has released the Make America Healthy Again report, which focuses on what's driving chronic diseases for kids across the country. The report criticizes many aspects of the American food system, but also calls for more research to back up its strongest claims. When it comes to pesticides, the report cites studies that link popular farming products like glyphosate and atrazine to bad health outcomes, but still says that more independent studies are necessary. The report and cabinet officials say this won't hurt agriculture, but farm groups believe this will lead to doubt and confusion over pesticide use despite decades of rigorous testing. The report also cited alleged health impacts from ultra-processed foods, seed oils, added sugars, and fats. The chairman of the House and Senate Ag Committees, John Bozeman and G.T. Thompson, issued a joint statement saying they are troubled by the report because of its potential consequences for farmers. The report was put together by the Make America Healthy Again Commission, led by Health and Human Services Chairman Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins and EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin were also part of the commission. President Trump's big, beautiful budget bill is now before the Senate, and the legislation could see some significant changes. Wisconsin GOP Senator Ron Johnson, for one, says he thinks they have enough votes to, quote, stop the process until the president gets serious about spending reduction and reducing the deficit. Any changes made to the bill in the Senate would force the bill back to the House. Congressional Republicans are aiming to have the bill finished by the 4th of July. The bill includes big wins for farmers, including the tax benefits and the more than $56 billion increase for farm bill programs. It would also bring IRA conservation funding into the farm bill baseline and remove restrictions that limit the dollars to climate-smart practices. However, the bill has historic cuts to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, totaling about $286 billion. Dan Glickman was the Secretary of Agriculture under the Clinton administration. We asked him how he sees the reconciliation bill changing in the Senate.
Well, I think it will change. They have something in the Senate called the Byrd Rule, which limits extraneous amendments and discussions. It makes it much more tight in terms of the dollar amount and the fiscal limits that you can spend. So, while I think the House and the president would like to just see the House bill pass, I don't think that's going to happen. Now, what that will mean, I'm not sure. I think they will minimize the cuts in nutrition programs to some degree. I don't think the add-ons in agriculture commodity spending will be quite as much as in the House bill. We'll see. So I think it will change, Andrew.
Democrats and the House and Senate, they've stressed now that cutting nutrition assistance to fund farm programs is going to make it harder to pass a farm bill later on. What are your thoughts on that line of thinking?
For over 50 years, we've had this coalition of urban and rural interests and farm and consumer interests working together to get farm bills passed. So that would include not only the farm programs, commodity programs, but it would also include the nutrition programs as well. That is fraying right before our eyes. I mean, that coalition, at least right now, it doesn't really exist. And it today, historically, that's been the way that you've been able to get farm bills through. But this particular reconciliation bill, which is in effect somewhat of a farm bill as it affects farm policy, no longer has that urban-rural coalition. So, what does that mean in the long term? I think it's going to make it a lot harder to pass farm bills, and we should be worried about that.
I'd like to piggyback a little bit more on that partisanship. We've seen it a lot here over the past couple years. Should farmers be worried that we may not see another comprehensive farm bill anytime soon after all of that partisanship that we've seen?
I'd say two parts to that. Number one is that I think the Congress will always be responsive to farmers, farm policy, commodity programs, crop insurance. I think that the record is clear that there's pretty good support about it. But if farmers are worried about will there be another farm bill this year or next year, wherever, they should be worried because we haven't passed one in now a few years. I'm frankly not very optimistic we're going to see a farm bill. This may be the farm bill. And even though it doesn't deal with all the titles of the other historic farm bill. So we're at a strange junction point when it comes to passing farm policy.
We'll be back with more from former Ag Secretary Dan Glickman right after this.
These are the farmers and ranchers who help build the America we depend on, and Farm Credit is here for them, supporting rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services. In good times and bad, we provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural home buyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. We help agricultural producers feed the world. Learn more today.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. The U.S. Court for International Trade ruled President Trump overstepped his authority in using the Emergency Economic Powers Act to impose tariffs on all countries. We asked Dan Glickman about his thoughts on the ruling.
Well, first of all, I thought the tariffs were terrible. I thought they hurt agriculture very dramatically. I mean, we have to export roughly 30, 35, 40% of our products because we don't consume any more than about 60% of aggregate farm products in our country. So if we don't export, we're in deep trouble. And so I think the tariffs that were announced were not well thought out, that hit agriculture particularly hard. The president made some sort of a statement where he said, well, our farmers will love being able to develop U.S. markets and won't have to rely on export markets. Well, that's ridiculous because we've got to have those export markets. So I think this is an interesting ruling. I think it's going to be appealed, certainly, whether to the Supreme Court or elsewhere. So I don't think the issue is done. But I think it does reflect that most people who are involved in trade policy think that these tariffs went way too far and there wasn't a clear justification for them.
Despite that ruling happening, there is still the threat of trade wars on the horizon. Should farmers still be worried about that?
Yeah, I think they should worry about trade and tariff issues, geopolitical issues. I mean, we're talking about, are we going to have a nuclear war in Iran? What's going to happen with Taiwan, with China? I mean, all those things affect agriculture and farm production and both domestic consumption. And then we have all the health issues. You may want to ask about the Maha report. That could affect agriculture as well. So these are very uncertain times. And the thing, Andrew, that disturbs me the most right now about what's happening is that the total uncertainty about everything. From day to day, we don't know what's going to happen about tariffs. We don't know what's going to happen about a farm bill. And our government, our national government, does not seem to be working all that well to come to conclusion. And then we have this horrendous national debt that this bill, this big, beautiful bill, increases rather dramatically. And so a lot of uncertainty out there.
I'd like to wrap with the USDA downsizing that's going on. About 15,000 employees have taken buyouts from the department so far. Do you think the department has the staff that it needs to protect American agriculture or to do critical research?
My answer in some areas is no. And the research area particularly worries me because it's research not only in agriculture, but in the NIH and health and everything else. I think we're cutting that far too much. Food safety worries me in terms of having an adequate staff to deal with these foodborne diseases that are out there. And we want to make sure that we have enough staff to deal with commodity programs, crop insurance, and those kinds of things. I assume some downsizing can be done without dramatically destroying the ability to deliver programs. But, you know, this is happening to the entire federal government. Agriculture is just one of the agencies that's been impacted by this. Some agencies have been cut by 40 and 50%. Some agencies have basically been eliminated. The question here is, will Congress do the appropriate oversight to determine whether this makes sense or not? And in the area of agriculture, hopefully the Senate and House Agriculture Committees don't just accept these things as a fait accompli, that go into it, do the appropriate oversight, because Congress has to have a role in this. If they're going to pass programs, they're going to have to know how many people it takes to properly implement and oversee it.
Former Secretary of Agriculture Dan Glickman, thank you so much for joining us, sir.
You're welcome. Thank you, Andrew.
We'll be right back with more of our panel discussion, but first, Lydia Johnson looks at the amount of land USDA can enroll in the Conservation Reserve Program in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
USDA is accepting new applications for the Conservation Reserve Program, but high enrollment in recent years and federal funding will limit the amount of land USDA can enroll. Authorization of the program will lapse on September 30th, when the latest Farm Bill extension expires. That would leave uncertainty for farm country as to whether USDA could accept applications next year. As you can see on this chart, 25.9 million acres are currently enrolled in CRP. This is just 1.1 million acres away from the program's 27 million acre cap. CRP enrollment has been shifting in recent years. There's less interest in the general signup, which focuses on retiring whole fields from production for 10 to 15 year periods, and more interest in grassland enrollment, which allows farmers to graze land in emergency conditions. There's also a category called continuous CRP for environmentally sensitive land devoted to certain conservation practices. The program's acreage limit may keep continuous CRP enrollment opportunities limited for 2025. Once all acres have been filled, everyone else could be turned away. Four major conservation programs were included in the House's budget reconciliation bill passed last week, but CRP was left out. Its fate likely depends on Congress passing either a separate farm bill or an extension of existing farm bill programs left out of reconciliation. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Register now for the 2025 AgriPulse Food and Ag Issue Summit in California. The event will offer participants a full day of presentations and panel discussions. You can hear from members of the California Legislature, food and agriculture leaders, along with industry experts and academics. This summit takes place June 10th in Sacramento and through our virtual experience. See the latest information and register with the QR code on your screen or under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
Secretary Johanns, thank you so much for joining us this morning, as always. Senate Republicans will spend the coming weeks trying to agree on changes to President Trump's big, beautiful budget bill, as he's calling it. You know the Senate well from your time there. How do you expect this bill to change?
Well, I believe it's going to change. That's first place to start. But on one hand, you've got people saying, look, there's not enough deficit reduction. And that's probably led by Ron Johnson. Although there's others who are a part of that. He says he's got enough people, enough senators that are singing off that same hymnal that he can stop this bill. So there's the issue right there. How do they get more deficit reduction? So I think there's got to be some changes there. The second thing that I think you're going to run into is you've got a bird rule. You've got a parliamentarian. So they've got to sign off on this. The parliamentarian does. The Byrd rule also is a factor. You can only do so much with reconciliation. The whole idea is to protect the filibuster. So by the time it goes through what we call the Byrd bath, and the parliamentarian blesses the thing, you would have to imagine there'll be some changes there. Then there's just always the things that come up with senators. You know, I want a little of this, I want a little of that. So I have to imagine that by the time it's all said and done, it's going to go back to the House and they're going to have to address some Senate changes.
I'd like to talk about the farm programs in particular. You know, Democrats say House Ag Chair Thompson is breaking up that rural-urban coalition that has been historically important for passing those farm programs. Do you see that happening? And if so, how would that impact future farm bills?
It's happened. It's not that I see it happening. I believe it has happened. If you look into the reconciliation bill and start peeling back the onion, it's pretty amazing to me how much farm bill was put into the reconciliation bill. The focus tends to be on the reference prices. They were increased pretty well across the board. A lot of commodities will be positively impacted by that. You've got a whole host of other provisions in there. that piece of the reconciliation bill kind of reads like a farm bill, if you want to be perfectly candid about it. So it looks to me like the coalition broke up. I think Chairman Thompson said, look, this is the only train leaving this station, so I've got to get on top of this and try to get some things done through reconciliation. The problem with that is going to be that there were pretty severe cuts that were done to the SNAP program and other important food aid programs. So that's a red line. For Democrats, that's a red line. So it's a little hard for me to imagine that they come back to the table and say, well, we'll forget about those massive cuts that were made to the food program.
I'd like to talk a little bit more about some of the partisan politics we've been seeing on Capitol Hill a lot recently, over the past couple years even. Should farmers be concerned that we may not see comprehensive farm bills in the future after all of this partisanship that we've seen?
You know, things can always change. Pendulum does swing back and forth from Washington. We all know that. That was a delicate balance. When I was in the Senate, it was getting harder and harder to get a farm bill done, just because there were so many stakeholders pulling at that farm bill. And you know, people wanted less spending, people wanted more spending, people wanted bigger programs, this, that, and the next thing. And these are very, very expensive things. So the problem we were running into is keeping the coalition together. Now, as I said, the coalition's been frayed. So as I look to the future, I must admit I'm a bit pessimistic that you put that back together. Now, again, I'll emphasize that the pendulum does swing. What looks pretty bleak today can change tomorrow. But this was a pretty significant departure from how you traditionally got a farm bill done.
We'll be back with more from former Secretary of Agriculture Mike Johanns right after this.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Farming presents the 15 Minutes with a Farmer podcast. In each episode, a successful farming editor has a quick conversation with a farmer, chock full of stories and advice from their area of agriculture. They're interesting, educational, and perfect for your busy schedule. Search for 15 Minutes with a Farmer wherever you download your podcasts.
Welcome back. The U.S. Court for International Trade ruled President Trump overstepped his authority in using the Emergency Economic Powers Act to impose tariffs on all countries. We asked Mike Johanns about his thoughts on the ruling.
Well, I kind of, peeled back the onion, and it was a unanimous ruling that caught my attention immediately. It was done by three judges who come from very, very different backgrounds. You can't say that the liberals controlled that ruling or the progressives. So you can't say that the conservatives controlled that ruling. It was three judges with pretty varied backgrounds. So that caught my attention. The other thing I would say is that it was very broad. They said basically to the president, you've tried to take this law and extend it well beyond what Congress intended. So now, I would say this, that's going to be appealed. It's in the process of being appealed literally as we speak. So we haven't seen the last of this, and this is one of those issues that I would fully expect it would go to the U.S. Supreme Court, and we'll see how those nine judges decide this. But it was pretty shocking. And like I said, it caught my attention that three judges of different backgrounds agreed unanimously on the opinion.
And President Trump has been busy, at least working really hard before that ruling, to get new trade deals done. What's your thoughts just so far on the president's trade strategy?
God bless him. I mean, this is overdue. You know, I think about the issues we have always faced with the European Union. They want to sell us their wine and cheese and specialty meats and whatever, whatever. They don't want to buy our products. And they've always got a reason. It's poultry wash or it's hormones or it's something. I mean, there is always a reason. It just drives me nuts. China, very good trading partner, and drifted away. You know, it's just very, very frustrating that China, they want a one-way street. It just drives you crazy that people want access to this tremendous market in the United States. Countries want that access, but they don't want to be reciprocal about it. And so I applaud President Trump. He's trying to get a level playing field, and he's facing some real obstacles. But if he can improve trade and level the playing field and open up new markets for agriculture, it's a big deal.
I'd like your thoughts, too, on the Make America Healthy Again Commission report that dropped last week as well. The chairman of the House and Senate Ag Committee say they're troubled by that report because of its potential consequences for farmers. What are your initial thoughts on the report and its impacts on American agriculture?
You know, when I read the report and read all of the a lot of the articles about the report, all I could think of is they want us to go back to the 1940s or the 1950s. You know, how many studies have been done on various crop protection products that are out there that have come to the same conclusion that these are safe, that they can be used? I mean, and then you read this report and they put the bullseye on pesticides and whatever else. And it, to me, it's extremely frustrating. It's like taking scientific development, very, very careful analysis, turning it upside down and relying on speculation and theory. And it's just, you can't feed the world the way they want to feed the world. I mean, sure, I love the farm I grew up on, 160 acres, 30 cows, you know, some chickens and hogs and cattle. But quite honestly, you won't feed the world that way. And we have a growing population worldwide. We have to do better than what that report is asking us to do. It's just not possible to feed the world with what that report is, the direction that report is heading us in.
Former Ag Secretary Mike Johanns, thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Yes, you bet.
We'll be right back with more newsmakers, but first, Lydia Johnson looks at U.S. counties most reliant on farming in this week's Map It Out.
Counties whose local economies are most reliant on farming are primarily located in the central United States. Based on an analysis from the USDA Economic Research Service, 453 of the 3,143 U.S. counties are classified as having a high concentration of earnings and jobs in farming. This means at least 20% of the annual average labor and proprietor's earnings come from ag production. 409 of these are in a region stretching from the Dakotas down to the Texas Panhandle, including most of the counties in both Nebraska and South Dakota. 44 of the farming-intensive counties are located in metro areas where many residents commute for work, but the economic activity remains concentrated in agriculture. While the shaded counties do not necessarily have the highest levels of ag production or the most ag land, they rely most on farming for their earnings and jobs. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Register now for the 2025 AgriPulse Food and Ag Issue Summit in California. The event will offer participants a full day of presentations and panel discussions. You can hear from members of the California Legislature, food and agriculture leaders, along with industry experts and academics. This summit takes place June 10th in Sacramento and through our virtual experience. See the latest information and register with the QR code on your screen or under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
Check out our full lineup of Successful Farming podcasts. The Successful Farming podcast goes in-depth into the topics that affect farmers and ranchers. The 15 Minutes with a Farmer podcast offers a quick conversation between an editor and a farmer. The SF Shorts podcast offers bite-sized interviews about agricultural topics. And the SF Daily podcast covers commodity markets, weather, and the big things happening in agriculture each morning. Search for Successful Farming wherever you download your podcasts.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Here's what's on the horizon for next week. Both the House and Senate will be back in session. The House Agriculture Committee is holding a hearing on conservation, while the Senate Ag Committee will take action on a bill called the Whole Milk for Healthy Kids Act. Also, sign up is open for the AgriPulse Food and Ag Issues Summit in Sacramento, California on June 10th. You can gain insights on water issues, the ag economy, and perspectives from the California Capitol from industry leaders and lawmakers. To sign up, visit the Events tab on our website, www.agripulse.com. And finally, my colleague Lydia Johnson will bring you a special episode next week from the World Pork Expo in Des Moines, Iowa. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Andrew Hunneke. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.